we were in the middle of the Hakdama to Perek Aleph in the Mesil Shishori. A discussion in a more general way of what the Mesil started to speak about in this Perek, and that is the purpose of existence. And last week we presented a Medrash and two Mishnayos that we're going eventually to explain. The two Mishnayos are, in one hand, Yofa Shoachas Shel Koras Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayolam Hazeh, which makes Olam Haba paramount over Olam Hazeh. And the other Mishnah, Yofa Shoachas Shel Tshuva Maisim Tovim Ba'olam Hazeh Mikol Chayolam Haba, which makes Olam Hazeh even more important than Olam Haba. He asked, how do you qualify them that they're both true? And the second thing we spoke about was a medrash about the two Rishoyim, that one of them goes to Gehenna, and he sees that they bring the neshama of his partner to Gan Eden, and the Malach tells him that your partner did tshuva before he died, and this person offers to do tshuva too. And the Malach informs him it's too late, you can't do tshuva when you're ready in Olam Haba, and he gives him three mishalim, like Erev Shabbos and Shabbos. If you don't prepare Erev Shabbos, you have nothing to eat on Shabbos. And the yam and the abosha, if you don't prepare on the dry land, you can't get food in the boat in the middle of the sea. And the yishuv and the midbar, if you don't prepare yourself in the city, you can't survive in the desert. And you didn't prepare yourself in this world, you no way that you can do it in the next world. And we asked two questions. One, why does he need three mishalim? And secondly, why didn't he tell him the mission in Pirkei Avos that this world is like a preparation room to a castle? Prepare yourself in the preparation room. You get into the castle. Why didn't you tell him that, Marshall? That didn't you know the world you came from was a preparation room? You didn't prepare yourself there, and now you're in the castle. You can't get into the castle. Those were the questions we asked. Last week, we gave an explanation of the first philosophy of life, which is basically secular philosophy, that life starts when you're born, ends when you die. And the purpose of life is to fill it with things that are pleasurable. And we said that for some people, things that are pleasurable are very refined. For some people, things that are pleasurable are very not refined. But it all boils down to the same bottom line. I'm in this world to enjoy myself, to have a fulfilling life. And it starts when you're born, ends when you die, and that's it. And we said that if that's all that life is, then basically it's a long death. You're born, you begin to die. And that's what Chazal mean, Rishoyim b'chayehem nikroyim mesim. Rishoyim, their lifetime is described as dying. They are constantly dying. Then the Torah philosophy of life is not like that at all. And I don't remember how much of this we spoke about, if anything, so we'll start from the beginning. Did we speak about it? Okay. So let's start from the beginning again. And that is the following. What Chazal revealed to us about the purpose of existence is that the Rabbanu Shlom, who is the ultimate good, wanted to shower his goodness on a creation that could receive that goodness. And that goodness is what we call Olam Haba. The ultimate good is God himself. And showering his goodness means that we would have an eternal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He would attach himself to us. And that's what we call Olam Haba, Tzadikim Yoshvim, Vatroseihem, Birosheihem, V'nehenem Iziv Hashchina. The ultimate pleasure is an eternal spiritual pleasure of having a connection with the Rabbanu Shalom. And that was the purpose of creation. So theoretically, God could have created neshamas, put them into Olam Haba, and that would have been it. He would fulfill his purpose of creation. But Chazal say that that would have been nahama d'chsufa. That would have been bread that a person is embarrassed to eat. Because what you don't earn, what you don't deserve, you don't appreciate fully. You appreciate it, but not fully. And therefore, in order for the good that God wanted to shower on the neshama to be perfect and as great as it could be, it had to be earned and deserved. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this physical world with all of its limitations. It's an olam of din, of justice. Doesn't mean harshness. It means you get what you deserve. No help. And that fulfills the purpose of giving God's chesed, his total kindness, right, of wanting to shower his goodness, it puts it into perspective where now it's a total kindness because it's earned. Before we go on, there's a basic question over here that has to be answered that the Mesillas Yesharim does not address. In Derech Hashem, he doesn't address it directly, but indirectly, perhaps. Basically, there's no answer to this question. And I'm going to explain to you why there's no answer. The question is like this. If that's the reason for existence and the world as we know it, God really wanted to create neshamas, shower his goodness on them, and that would have been enough. But since neshamas would not have appreciated that goodness, therefore, it had to be qualified with a physical world where the neshama earns that reward, which we'll get into much more detail in a little while, then l'chara, God could have saved a lot of time and money. He didn't have to create this world. He just could have changed the rules. He could have created a neshama that can appreciate what it doesn't earn. Is that not impossible? God can do anything. So why couldn't he create a neshama that could appreciate what it doesn't earn? And that would have saved the whole purpose of creating this world. Just change one rule, and it makes it much simpler. So why did God have to create a world with neshamas that only appreciate what they earn, when he could have created neshamas that appreciate what they don't earn, and then showered them with Olam Haba without having to come resort to Olam Hazeh? The answer to that question is there is no answer. The reason there is no answer is because we can't possibly think or fathom anything that's outside of our frame of reference. We can only imagine things that are within our frame of reference. Let me give you two examples. Imagine, close your eyes, and picture in your mind nothing. Don't close them too tight because I don't want to be the only person awake over here. Nothing. You see in your mind's eye nothing? Put your hand into that nothing and leave it there for a second. That's not nothing. That's space. Try again. Nothing is no space. Don't even try to imagine it. You get a headache. You can't imagine it because we have no frame of reference to no space. So we can't even imagine it. We can't possibly fathom something that we have no frame of reference to. Another example. Imagine something that you never saw and never heard of. It's possible. What will you imagine? A monster with 10 heads, 4 legs, 6 arms, but you saw arms, heard about them, legs, and whatever. I'm talking about something that you never saw or heard of any part of it. It's impossible, because if you never saw or heard of it, how could you possibly imagine it? Right? It's something you have no frame of reference to. So you'll ask me, then how do we have a frame of reference to God? Right? We speak about the Rabbanu, so we're supposed to believe in him. We have no frame of reference. We do. Our only frame of reference to the Rabbanu Shalom is within creation. That's why the greatest name we have for the Rabbanu Shalom is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which basically means he is the one who brought the world into existence. Before the world came into existence, we have no name for HaKadosh Baruch. We have no reference to him. We only deal with HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the Bria and on, not before the Bria. Because the Rabbanu Shalom separated from the Bria, we have absolutely no frame of reference to him. So we can't even refer to him. We call him Ein Sof. That's not a name. That's a cop-out. That means I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm just saying it's something that means nothing to me. Therefore, the Mishnah says in Chagiga that you're not allowed to ask what came before the world, what's beyond the world, not because it's usher, because it's impossible. Because if it came before the world or it's beyond the limitations of this world, we have no frame of reference to it. We can only deal with things within our frame of reference, within our framework. And that's within creation, from the time started and within the framework of the universe. Therefore, asking a question, why couldn't God have created a world different than he did, is a question on God's mind before creation. That's something that we can't fathom at all. The most we can do is say, once God created the world the way he did, the way we know it, that we have a connection to, what can we understand about it? But why it couldn't have been different is impossible to ask. Because it's a question on God's mind. Why couldn't he have done it differently? That's God's business. It's nothing that we could possibly understand. So once God chose to create the world the way he did, what can we understand about it? That is the question that the Mesillas Yesharim is going to answer. Not the question, why did God create the world the way he did? Right? That's like a question, well, couldn't God create a rock that he can't lift? Right? And supposedly there are many children who have gone off the derech because of this question. Nobody's ever gone off the derech because of that question. People have gone off the derech and used that question as a teretz. But Lamaisa, that's not a question you can ask. That something has to do with God's mind outside of creation completely. It's not something that our minds could even fathom. So therefore, what we are going to discuss now is not why did God create the world the way he did. The question is only, once God created the world the way he did, what can we understand about it? So that's a given, that the Ribbono Shel Olam, for whatever reason he had to create neshamas that needed to earn to appreciate. Okay. So now let's go back to the... So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam created a physical world of din. And that was the original plan, that there should only be justice. You get exactly what you deserve, because that was the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is to afford the neshama the ability to earn, and we'll see more correctly, to create the world to come. And therefore, if you get any help, it's counterproductive, because God could have given it to you for free, but he knew that you wouldn't appreciate it if you didn't earn it. So the more you get it for free or with help, the more counterproductive it is. What's really productive is to get it only because you earned it 100% with no help. And that's what it means. B'tchilo olo b'machshov al yiboros b'midas adin. Originally, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this physical world, his intention was that it should be a world of total din. Total justice. You get what you deserve, no help at all. But he saw, right, not as an afterthought, this is all part of the plan. He understood that if he creates a world with kulo din, it'll be great for the people who can access that. But many people will use their free choice wrongly, and justice will demand that they get nothing. They won't earn their chesed, they will lose it. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, in order to maintain at least some semblance that a majority of people, a good portion of people, will earn what they could have gotten for free, right, at least minimally, so the Ribbono Shel Olam added rachamim to the din. Rachamim is not chesed. Rachamim is not unconditional. It mitigates the din. The example they give is, if the din says throw a boulder on this guy, so you break the boulder into little pieces and throw the little pieces on the guy. You've done the din, but it's done in a way that's mitigated. So rachamim does not destroy din. It just mitigates it. It gives you extra time to do tshuva, whatever. That's what rachamim is. Chesed is unconditional. The original purpose of creation was chesed. God said, unconditional kindness. I want to shower my goodness on you. But I want it to be the ultimate goodness. So you're going to have to earn it. But if you're going to have to earn it, that means you could lose it very easily if you don't deserve it. So I'm going to mitigate the din with rachamim for those that need it. However, ideally speaking, if someone could exist in this world without any rachamim, that would be ideal. Because then whatever you get, you earn. You get no help at all. And that is exactly what Yaakov Avinu asked for and got. V'hoya Hashem li lelokim. So she explains the Michtam Eliyahu. Hashem, who's midas harachamim, I don't want it. I don't want the irachamim. I want only Elokim din. Elokim means God within nature, within the framework and limitations. Everything is limited. You get what you deserve. No extra. No, nothing beyond the strict limitations. And therefore, Yaakov Avinu had a very harsh life. But in the end, everything that he got totally because he earned it. Didn't get any help. So his Olam Haba is unbelievable. But for the little things, since he's human and he's imperfect, for the little imperfections, he had to suffer. Rabbi Akiva was on the same level. Right? When the Malachim said, when they were combing Rabbi Akiva's flesh, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, this is the reward you give for people of Rabbi Akiva's stature in Torah. God said, "Shtok, you keep quiet." Ki kach also b'machshava l'fonai. This is what arose in my thought. So the simple meaning is, it's my, you can't understand my thoughts, lo machshavosai, lo machshavoseicha, and only I can understand why Rabbi Akiva has to be treated like this. You can't understand, even the angels can't understand. But the Shalach HaKadosh says that's not what it means. Kach also b'machshava lefanei means, b'tchila olo b'machshava lehiboros midas adin. In the beginning, God's original intention was to create this world with only din. Only as a necessity did he add rachamim. But the necessity is only for those people who need it. For people who can exist according to that first plan, they go into plan A. They don't need plan B. So they have only din. And that's Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva only got din. So the few things that he did wrong, he got punished with the total severity, no mercy. But the rest of it was totally earned Olam Haba. That's why it says that Rabbi Akiva's Olam Haba, no one can fathom that Olam Haba. Totally earned. No help. And that was Yaakov Avinu's mistake. Yaakov Avinu, when he was introduced to Paro for the first time, Yosef brought him in. So Paro looks at him and he says, my God, how old are you? He looked like he was 300 years old. So Yaakov said, I'm not that old. I had a real miserable life. It was short and didn't reach the age of my forefathers. And it was ma'ad, the royal, real terrible life. So Yaakov was punished for that. Zechul Hashem. Here's a goy, sees a tzaddik for the first time, and he complains about his life. So what does he say? Well, people who believe in God, see, they have miserable lives. So Yaakov was punished. He died early because of that. So what did Yaakov think? Didn't Yaakov know this? It seems simple to me. Why didn't Yaakov think about it? The answer is that to Yaakov Avinu, what he said was bragging about his life. Yaakov Avinu asked, I should have no mercy. I get exactly what I deserve. If that means that I do a little bit wrong, I'm going to have to suffer tremendously, but in the end, everything else is going to be my Olam Haba that I earned without any help. So Yaakov said, oh no, I had a short, miserable life. He was bragging, hey, that was great. You know, that's really the thing. Miserable life, you know, a lot of tsaros or whatever. I didn't get any help, no rachamim. So then why was he punished? Because he's talking to Paro, right? You have to talk the language of the people you're talking to and speak in their terms, not in your terms. Paro hears short, miserable life. He thinks of something bad. Yaakov, you know, thinks that's great, right? But Paro doesn't hear it like that. You have to say it in the way that the people will understand what you're saying. And it could be Yaakov, you know, said it in a way that he thought he was really getting through to Paro and explaining to him, you know, this whole shir, right? And he thought Paro was on a level he could understand it, but he didn't get through to him. Paro's cup was like, you know, if you hear these words, that's ridiculous. So that's why Yaakov was punished, because in the Mishnah he was judged without any mercy. So he lost a few years of his life because of that. In any case, so that was the ideal. The Rabban Shem added Rachamim as a second, better you get something with Rachamim than nothing because of Din. But the ideal would be to get everything with Din. Now I'm going to tell you now, I hesitate to say, okay, but you have to say it, because otherwise the question's a very strong question that usually is not asked. And that is the following. God wanted to shower the world with his chesed and attach himself to all the neshamas that were created. And he wanted to do it total with din, but lamaisa, what's it called, people need rachamim too. But let's honestly look at the world. Most people, okay, we're talking about goyim too, because goyim also have a chelik in olam haba if they do what's right. Most people, I think probably Jews and non-Jews, are going to end up in Gehenna for quite a while, right? And a lot of things that are really not nice. Wouldn't it have been better just to get the Olam Haba? So you didn't earn it, you didn't deserve it, but better than all these onshim and punishments or whatever, and people lose their Olam Haba, right? So wouldn't it have been better to get it unearned than to have to earn it, and when there's only a minimal amount of people that end up earning this, even with Rachamim? But the majority of the world are all ending up not getting any kind of chesed. The answer to that is, and again, I hesitate to say it because it could have a very negative effect on people. The answer is that in the end, nobody gets less than what they would have gotten had they not come into this world at all. The original chesed the Rabban Shem wanted to do, everybody will get. It says there are people who lose their Olam Haba, even those people. But that means, I, not that I don't want to explain it, I can't explain it 100%, but in the end, there's a klal of lo yidach mimenu nidach. No one's neshama loses less than you would have gotten had you not come into this world at all. You can only gain. That gain will come sometimes through a lot of suffering and Gehenna or whatever. But in the end, you won't get less than you would have gotten had there been no Olam Hazeh. So no one's going to get less than that.
Right,
right. The Chara, that's, yeah, that explains that Gemara. Okay? And a Chanami. It would be better, even though you can explain that Gemara in a more rational way. But ultimately, if you wouldn't have been created, you still would have gotten no less than you get. You could get more, but you won't get less. Now, what's dangerous about that is then people say, well, why bother trying anything? In the end, I'm going to get something anyway, right? So I might as well enjoy myself over here. It doesn't work like that 100%, but that is the emes. The emes is that lo yidach mimenu nidach. And again, you can ask me from this place and that place and the shamas that are in the Gehenna forever and all of that. Doesn't mean forever. It means up to a certain point, but in the end, everybody gets what the Rav Amishon intended in the beginning, or more, not less.
Yeah,
okay, okay, Anachanani. You have to go through all of that, but in the end, right, after you've gone through it, you have no less than you would have gotten otherwise. Yeah?
Well, what about the story of Esau and Yaakov, the idea that there was an Olam Haba, that they were going to get half and half, and then, of course, they were thinking about half.
Hold on now. It's off the topic to a certain degree.
Then,
and, yeah, it's like it's not what it seems to be. Yeah.
If Hashem created Rachamim with the din, why shouldn't that be applicable to everybody, including Rabbi Akiva and Yaakov?
No, only for the people who need. It says God originally intended to create a world only with din. But he saw that people couldn't exist like that, so he added rachamim. He only added the rachamim for the people who needed it. That's how the Shalom HaKadosh says.
So we're saying 2 weeks ago, right after the Bible, that's when he added.
Yeah, okay, that's yeah. You have a real good memory. I have no proof to that. That for the klal, it only happened after the Bible. For the prat, it happened immediately. Yeah, okay. But that's not anything that has any source to it, just me, so we'll leave it go. I had to say a drush on Parshas Noach. What? Right. Even the people that says that they lost their chelik in Olam Haba didn't lose it forever. Whatever that means.
Okay. Including Graham?
Everybody.
Why the... At some point they say, well, better that we shouldn't have been created.
That's what Rav Aaron just mentioned.
But if they would say that, so they're saying that if you're created, then you have the potential that you're going to lose out. But the Rav is saying, you're not going to lose out more than if you hadn't been created.
You can only gain.
What it means is like this. Yeah, you're not going to lose out more than if... Better we shouldn't have been created, because then you would get guaranteed Olam Haba. You now taking a risk, maybe that you're going to lose it. But you have to go through a lot of tzaras to get that minimum. You could get more. So the question is it better to take a risk to get more or to take what you have less without the risk? That is the adage, I think Benjamin Franklin, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
There's not really a risk because even if you don't gain more, you still didn't lose what you had at the beginning.
Yeah, but in order to get what you had in the beginning, you have to go through a lot of suffering and Gehenna or whatever.
It's like a goy considering becoming a goy again.
Stay where you are and you do less. Yeah, okay. Similar to that. Okay. In any case, so we're now up to the point where we understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's original intention was to shower himself on the neshama. In order for that to be really appreciated, the neshama had to come into this world and earn that connection. Okay, but now we'll qualify that. The neshama does not come into this world to earn Olam Haba. It's to create Olam Haba. We don't earn Olam Haba. Earning Olam Haba is what people think. It's like a Purim carnival. You know, there's games to play. And if you win, you get coupons. At the end of the day, you bring your coupons to the prize booth. If you have a lot of coupons, you get a big bear. Get little coupons, get a little bear. Right? So that's what people think, that this world is an Olam Haba. In this world, you play games called mitzvahs. Unfortunately, there are also negative games, right? Those are called averus. And at the end of your life, they punch your name into this master computer in the heavens, right, if the server is working, and you they add up your points, demerits, give you a coupon, go cash it in over there in the prize booth for your share in the world to come. Doesn't work like that. Can't work like that. I'll give you a reason why. What? Right. There's another reason. No, the server can't be down. That's over there, right. That doesn't happen.
The,
what? That's right. The reason it can't be like that is the following. Imagine if somebody gave you one of these plush reclining TV chairs, you know, and you could sit in there and just spend the rest of your life there. Right, that's the dream, I guess, of any person. Could sit there, have buttons that bring him a robot with his food, right, and everything else he could possibly need, and it changes the channel on the TV, and you could sit there for the rest of your life and never have to get up. Somebody gives you one, and you sit in it, you would enjoy it. But what happens if you really wanted that chair and nobody ever gave it to you? So you had to earn money to buy it, and you had to work 6 days a week for a whole month to earn enough money to finally buy the chair. You worked for a month, and you went out and you bought your chair. Do you think you'd appreciate it more when you sat in it then? Of course. But what about the next scenario? You planted trees, nurtured them till they grew, and you could cut them down for lumber. You cut the trees into lumber. You mined iron, made it into nails. Banged the lumber together, made the frame of the chair. You raised sheep, sheared their wool, stuffed the chair with it. Raised cotton, wove it into fabric, upholstered the chair. Raised dyes, made the dyes, colored the chair. Now you sit in the chair. Do you think you'd appreciate it more than if you bought it? Of course, because you made it. So what you make is more appreciated than what you earn, and what you earn is more appreciated than what you're given for free. That means in order for Olam Haba to be totally appreciated, it can't be earned, it has to be created. You make it. So what does that mean? The Rabbanu Shem put us in this world, our neshamas in this world, and he said, I'm hiding myself in the world. That's Olam. Hiding myself in the Olam. And I want you to find me and attach yourself to me instead of me finding you and attaching myself to you. That's brought out with the following story with the Magid Mimezrich, who was the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. He once, left his house, and he sees a little six-year-old girl crying. She goes over to her and says, can I help you? Has something happened? She said, yeah, I've been playing hide-and-go-seek with my friends, and I've been hiding for half an hour. Nobody's looking for me. So he said, don't cry, little girl. God has the same problem. He's hiding himself in this world. Not too many people looking for him either. So that's the Rabbanu Shalom, and what does that mean? So we have to find him and attach ourselves to him. How do you attach yourself to him? First, you have to find him. You have to know where he is, what kinds of things will attach you to him. That's what we have a Torah. And the Torah is only the guidebook. It's not the ultimate. In other words, you can attach yourself to the Rabbanu Shalom not just when you do a mitzvah, but every single thing that you do in this world can be done in a way that attaches you to the Rabbanu Shalom or detaches you from it. That's what it says, Kol Masecha Yu L'Shem Shamayim, from the Pasuk, Kol Bechol Drochecha Do'ehu. Know God in everything you do. Knowing over there is the euphemistic knowing of attaching. That attachment is called yediyah. Attach yourself to God in every way. Meaning, Torah gave us an understanding of what is godly and what is not godly. What is a mitzvah, what's an aveira, what's kedusha, what's tuma, what's mutter, what's asur. We're supposed to learn from that how to apply that to every single area of life. And do everything we do, every second, in a way that is godly, so we make our neshamas more godlike, and in that way, after 120 years, you attach yourself to the Rabbanu Shalom more. The more godlike our neshamas are, the closer we can get to the Rabbanu Shalom. The less godlike, the less closer. So we transform our neshamas into more godlike entities, and that's how we create Olam Haba. And it's in everything you do. And that's brought out with the following Gemara. The Gemara says there was a famous Abarian. His name was Rabbi Elezer ben Durdoy. And he lived a life of sin. Till one day, in the midst of a sin, something happened that shocked him into doing tshuva. And his tshuva was so intense that he died from the intensity of the tshuva. And a bas kol went out and said, Ashrecha Rabbi Elezer ben Durdoy, Shem Nezumen Lolam Haba. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, when he heard this, he cried. And he said, Yesh kol no lomba b'shoachas. It's possible for a person to acquire his olam haba in one second. So the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva asked, why did Rabbi Yehuda Nasi cry about that? You should be elated that you can be koni your olam haba in one second. What was he crying about? He said he was crying about the fact that he realized you could do that every second. There's no limit of how much olam haba you can get. Olam haba means a close relationship to God. There is an infinite, eternal options of how close you can get to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's no limit. You can get closer and closer and closer and closer. If in mathematics, there's an infinite amount of whole numbers. But there's also an infinite amount of fractions between each whole number. That means, from a mathematical standpoint, you can have an infinite amount of infinities. So from Olam Haba's standpoint, you can have an eternal, infinite amount of eternities. So therefore, there's no limit to what a person can accomplish in this world. What's it called? And therefore, if you think about it, even though on the surface it would seem just the opposite, but the truth is not like that. On the surface it would seem that a person who doesn't believe in Olam Haba, okay, only has Olam Hazeh, as opposed to a religious person who believes in Olam Haba, and that's eternal, and Olam Hazeh is very short. Who would you think would treasure or consider more important, Olam Hazeh more important? The irreligious person or the religious person? So on the surface you would say that the irreligious person is machshiv Olam Hazeh more than a religious person. Because a religious person has Olam Haba. But this guy has only this world, so hey, this is it, right? Once you're gone, you're gone. So you might as well enjoy this. This is really important. There's nothing more. It's not true. In the eyes of a religious person, this world is a lot more important than an irreligious person could possibly imagine this world is. Why? Because to an irreligious person, a secular philosophy person, the first philosophy, what is Olam Hazeh? The accumulation of pleasure. So is any 1 second in this world intrinsically important? No. Because how much pleasure you can possibly have in 1 second? None. So 1 second in this world is not intrinsically important. What gives this world importance? Two factors. How much time do you have, and what quality of life do you enjoy? If you have a long time to live, that also doesn't make it an important world, because you could be in a coma on a heart-lung machine. Right? If you're in the peak of health, but you're 119 and three quarters, right, you don't have a whole lot of time left, so how much pleasure you could have. Besides the fact, at that point, you probably don't have your teeth, can't hear, can't see, can't remember who you are altogether, so you have no quality of life or time. So, from a secular standpoint, life in this world is not intrinsically important. It's only important if you can put together two factors, time and quality. That gives it importance. From a Torah standpoint, every single second in this world is intrinsically important and eternally important. Because in 1 second, you can change your whole life, you can think about a mitzvah, and you'll create eternity. So every second is eternity, intrinsically. And it doesn't make a difference what quality of life you have. You can be in a coma on a heart-lung machine, and the EEG says flat brain waves. Now, that does not mean necessarily the person's not thinking. All it means is that the machine can't detect brain activity. But maybe that's now. In 20 years, they'll make a better machine. I mean, I thought when they came out with reel-to-reel big tape recorders, right, like that was the ultimate in technology. Now they have these little things where I can't imagine where the reels are inside them. They and they can record a lot more than, those big reel-to-reel things. So in 20 years, they may have a much more sophisticated, machine that will pick up brain activity, and then we'll have to apologize to the guy we pulled the plug on because we didn't know you were thinking. But it could be that he'll never pick up anything. There is no physical brain activity. The brain's not functioning. That doesn't mean the person is not thinking. It means he's not thinking through his brain. But as long as his neshama is still in his body, the neshama can think. It can't express itself in this world, but it can think. The neshama thought very nicely before it came into this world. So it's like a spaceman whose radio is broken. He can still talk. He just can't talk in the environment he's in that you could hear him because there's no sound waves in outer space. But he can talk. Theoretically, he can talk to himself. Right? Can't make any noise, but he can talk. So the neshama can think. So big deal. So the neshama's thinking. What can it think about? It can think about doing tshuva in 1 second. Change your whole life. Or can think about doing a mitzvah that you can do without action. Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem. For 1 second. Make eternity. Or the halacha is that if you want to do a mitzvah, but you can't physically, then you get schar as if you did it. That guy in the coma can do more mitzvahs than I can. Because he can think about doing every single mitzvah and get schar for it because he can't do it. But I can't do that because I could do it. So, 1 second on the lowest level of quality of life is eternally significant from a Torah standpoint, whereas from a secular standpoint, it's not significant at all. So it's only the Torah Jew that really appreciates the value of this world, intrinsically. So, and that is ultimately the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Before we get to that, let's just answer the questions we started with last week so we don't continue this on. We have a little bit more to continue, but let's just answer the questions. Therefore, the Mishnah that says in Pirkei Avos that 1 second of pleasure in the world to come is greater than the sum total of all pleasure in this world is, if that's your outlook on life, that the purpose of this world is an end to enjoy, then Olam Haba has it beat 1,000, a million times over. Because whatever enjoyment you could possibly have in this world is nothing compared to the eternal spiritual enjoyment of having that close connection to the Rabbanu Shlomo. So it's nothing. This world is nothing compared to Olam Haba. But if you look at this world as a means to reach an end, as the place where you create Olam Haba, then it's even greater than Olam Haba. Because in Olam Haba, you got what you got, and you can't make any more. In this world, you can constantly create more. So this world is even greater than Olam Haba as a means to reach an end rather than an end in itself. That's the resolution between those two Mishnayis. Now let's get back to the Medrash. Why did the Malach tell this guy three Mishalim, Erev Shabbos, the Yamin, the Abasha, the Yishuv, and the what's it called, Midbar? Why didn't he tell him Prozdor? The answer is because the real Hashkafa of this world vis-a-vis the next world is a Prozdor b'fnei Olam Haba. Let's analyze the analogy. Why do they build preparation rooms to a castle for one purpose, to prepare to go in the castle? They don't build it for any other purpose. They don't build the preparation room for a castle somewhere on the beach, right? The only reason you'd build a preparation room for a castle to get into the castle. Therefore, what do they equip it with? Nothing except things that will help you to get into the castle. They don't put ping pong tables there. They don't put anything there except hair dryers, cosmetics, comb, whatever it is that you need to prepare to get in the castle. It's only equipped for that. And what do they use it for? They don't make bar mitzvahs there. But they do one thing there. They prepare to get in the castle. That's it. It's not used for anything else. So the analogy of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is that this world was created for no other purpose, nothing, except to prepare for Olam Haba. Because if it wasn't that you needed to create Olam Haba and earn it and deserve it, there wouldn't be any purpose for this world. It has no purpose of its own. It's only a preparation for Olam Haba. Memela, every single thing the Rabbanu Shlomo created in this world serves that purpose. There's nothing in this world that doesn't serve that purpose. That doesn't mean that you sit in the corner and say Tillim all day. It means that every single thing in the world some way can be used or not used in order to prepare you for Olam Haba. There's nothing in this world, animal, vegetable, mineral, nothing that can't be used for that purpose, otherwise it wouldn't be here. And lastly, what are you supposed to do here in this world? Only one thing. Prepare for Olam Haba. There's nothing else to do. And again, that doesn't mean sit in the corner and cram for your finals and say Tillim. It means, what's it called, that every single thing you do in every realm of life, every second of your day, can be done in a way that's more godlike or less godlike, that attaches you to the Rabbanu Shalom or detaches you and either prepares you for Olam Haba or you lose it. That's it. There's nothing else in this world. To go tell a Rasha who lived his whole life in crime, didn't you know the whole purpose of this world is for Olam Haba? Of course he didn't know that. He doesn't know it now either, because Rishoyim, after they're dead, are dead. They're not big philosophers and big tzaddikim. They're just dead Rishoyim. So the Malach didn't waste his breath to tell this guy, didn't you know that the whole purpose of Olam Hazeh is for the sake of Olam Haba? What did he tell him? He said, look, maybe in your mind you didn't understand that. Right? So I'm not going to even bother to tell you what the ideal was. But maybe in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like Erev Shabbos, and Olam Haba was like Shabbos. It's not the same analogy anymore. Erev Shabbos, you do things for the sake of Erev Shabbos. You don't only prepare for Shabbos on Erev Shabbos. You eat breakfast. You go to work. Right? Most of the day, both quantitatively and qualitatively, should be to prepare for Shabbos. But it's not total. It's not like the prostar. Maybe that you understood. That this world's a nice place, but the Maisa, the Iker, should be to prepare for Olam Haba. Then why didn't you prepare? And even if you didn't understand that, in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like the dry land, and Olam Haba was like the sea. Equal importance. No slight places. You do a lot of things on the dry land, you do a lot of things on the sea, but you knew that your boat was going to travel, was going to set sail one day. You weren't going to remain on the dry land. Why didn't you supply your boat? And even if that you didn't understand, but in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like the city, the main thing. And Olam Haba was like a desert. It was meaningless to you. But you knew one day everybody has to go into the desert. Why don't you prepare? And if you didn't believe there was an Olam Haba, then you surely don't deserve it. But if you believed it, then why didn't you prepare for it? And if it was irrelevant to you, fine, it's a desert. But if you know you have to go into the desert, whether you like it or not, you prepare a survival kit. Why didn't you prepare? Therefore, you deserve to be where you are. That's what the Malach told him. But ultimately, the real hashkafa is that Olam Hazeh is like a prosdor b'tnei Olam Haba. There's absolutely no purpose for this world except to prepare for Olam Haba. It's not equipped for anything else. It's not made for anything else. And you're not supposed to use it for anything else. But that is the entire gamut of life. Well, let's go fulfills that. Okay, in this session, next week we will finish this off. And then we will start also the first parak, and you'll understand it a lot better after this hakdamah.